Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You have one new voice message. New voice messages.
Hello, it's Thursday. Alright, I like to call it 5 days after Valentine's Day. And I'm still yet to receive flowers, chocolate, a card, anything to tell me that you love me or you care about me. I'm just disappointed, actually. I thought we were something. I thought we were meant to be, but evidently not. Happy Valentine's Day to you too. Jokes. I love you. Bye.
Deleted.
Hello and welcome to Daddy Look At Me,
a podcast where myself, Helen Bauer, and Rosie Jones sit down and talk to our favourite people from the world of showbiz about attention, childhood, and of course, daddy.
Great to have you here. Now let's crack on with the show.
I'm going to start a timer because we've got a tendency at the moment to talk for fucking ever.
Really?
So I'm honestly, it's a disaster. Like, how long have we been? We've recorded episodes at like 2 hours long at the moment.
No way.
Seriously. And then like, we release them at like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Because it's half of it is just me and Rosie singing.
I wonder what the longest one has been.
Maybe Joe Lysak's. We were fucking hammered.
Yeah.
What, were you drunk?
Yeah.
Really?
Why are you looking so surprised? We don't do every single one at 10 in the morning.
Well, this wasn't my idea. This was Rosie's idea.
Early, get him in.
She said, how about 10 a.m.? I thought, okay, this has gone on so long. I'll just say yes. Joe Lysak, were you pissed?
Yeah, it was like a 5 o'clock. Yeah. 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock recording.
That's still early.
Oh my God. Hey, you know what? The last thing we need from you right now is judgment.
You're pissed in here.
For the listener, it was, right, we're recording this on a Monday morning. We're both feeling fragile. It's cold outside and our guest is, I'm going to say, mentally attacking us.
I've already done Woman's Hour. Now I'm doing this podcast.
Welcome to Girls Hour. We love stickers.
This is basically the same as Woman's Hour.
Absolutely not.
But we might get a tit out. That's the only difference.
As if they're not recording Woman's Hour topless. Come on. You recorded it topless, right?
I don't think so.
Are you serious?
No, we were very fully clothed. Balaclavas.
Sort of women
lot.
Are they? Fucking hell.
Come on, it's Woman's Hour.
Well, yeah, Woman's Hour screams to me topless and like giving advice on
you
where to find
so,
the clip.
You're taking feminism backwards. You're taking women backwards. What is this medieval point of view?
I'm actually currently living in feminism 8th wave, personally, where we just do whatever we fucking want and then we pin condoms.
No, that's Beyonce feminism. It's not working.
Beyonce never pinned a condom.
This is becoming a religious experience.
So were you a religious kid? That was good.
No,
come on.
That was good.
That was really good.
That was good. Should we go with it?
Yes, please.
Let's go with Helen's segue there.
From the clapping, I'm guessing Baptist.
Well, actually, Helen, let me tell you, I wasn't, but my God, my parents were.
Serious.
And also, they sent me, I was very naughty as a child. obviously, attention seeking.
Yeah.
There was five of us. I've got three brothers and one sister.
Oh, look.
And I was the eldest girl. And honestly, my brothers were treated differently to me. They could do what they wanted. Mm-hmm. If they wanted girlfriends, if they wanted to play sport, they could do it. And I wasn't allowed. Because my mum and dad always used to say, you know, you need to learn to cook and clean because one day you're going to get married.
No.
That's what you're going to do.
Are you fucking kidding
me? No. And they were very strict. They weren't religious, but they were very cultural. But I was very naughty because I wanted attention because I wasn't being heard. My opinion didn't matter. My mum used to say things like, you know, don't talk too much. Nobody wants to marry a woman that talks too much. So I became a stand-up comedian. And I honestly, I think looking back, she was right. Because I haven't been able to get a man since. So I think she was right.
Who needs a man?
I agree, Rosie. I agree. But I do need to have sex before I die.
Now, you can masturbate. You can find someone.
No, I can't.
Sleep with
you. Don't know what to do. Honestly, Helen.
Are you serious?
Honestly, Helen. Honestly, Helen.
Okay, do you have to rush off at the end of this?
No. I'm in no hurry. I've got nowhere to go and nothing to do. But the thing
okay,
is.
Okay, I've got an app that will show you exactly what to do.
An app? Oh,
fine.
My God.
But that's upsetting for me that you don't know how to, like, wank yourself off.
I don't. And I have never done that.
Okay, we're doing. Right. Stay tuned for the bonus.
Oh, it's the best.
I'm not lying. But can I just say this? I was so naughty as a child. My parents sent me to a Roman Catholic primary school called Our Lady of Fatima. We're Muslim. And they sent us to Our Lady of Fatima, Roman Catholic primary school in Birmingham, where I was the only brown girl in the whole school. And they made me do Holy Communion every Friday, where I had to take the bread and wine. But because, well, I'm Muslim, I couldn't drink the wine, so I just had to have the bread. And all my friends were getting pissed. I was really upset because I wanted to have the wine.
They actually gave you wine as
yes. Yeah, it was a Roman Catholic primary school, and I used to go to mass. I loved it. I played Mary Magdalene in the school play.
Oh, here we fucking go. You got cast as Mary Magdalene, but not the Virgin Mary.
No.
That's not good. Why are you smiling? That's your teachers looking at you being like, that's a slut.
And I was the brown girl playing Mary Magdalene. And for some reason, I turned it into a comedy. Everything I did, the audience were just laughing. And I loved it.
Wait. There is a lot more to explore here. What age are you doing a play with Mary Magdalene? Were you
11.
Doing The Passion of the Christ?
I was 11.
And also, how is it okay that you were the only brown girl?
Well, the thing is, because it was a Catholic school, they wanted to be open to all religions and cultures. But actually, only Catholic went there, and I only went there because I was really naughty. I got expelled from my previous school for stealing biscuits out of the headmaster's office. And so my mother and father sent me to Our Lady of Fatima, where I was the only brown girl doing mass and Holy Communion, and I'm Muslim, and I was going along with somebody else's religion that wasn't even
you both seem completely okay with this.
I'm not okay.
You're not okay, but no. You seem okay.
No, like, but I had to go along with it. That was I didn't have any options. My parents were really strict. Their biggest threat to me was, if you don't do what we say, we're going to send you to Pakistan to get married. And that always used to fill me with fear.
Yeah.
And so I just did everything they said.
I'm trying to figure out. So
Helen, as a white woman, is so sympathetic to me. She's like, no, we must get a masturbation app. No, this couldn't have happened to you.
I am so lost. And half my family are Muslim as well. You
no
think
way.
I think, seriously.
No way.
I've had cousins chucked out the family and everything.
How come?
Malaysian. My family, like a half Malaysian.
Oh my God, seriously.
Seriously. But this is upsetting. But we were like better behaved.
Well, you better behaved.
I mean, I wasn't, but I was raised here.
I've got to tell you though, this is absolutely true. I mean, every day after school, they would send us to mosque lessons. Where I would have to, my friends were going to ballet and tap, and I wanted to do that. I always wanted to dance. Yeah.
Obviously, tap's the best. It's what the cool kids do.
I loved tap.
Me too.
I loved
too.
Tap. And I bought tap shoes in secret, but I was never allowed to wear them. And I just
wait.
Wait, right. How do you get money to get tap shoes? I'm assuming you stole them.
I stole the money from my mum's purse. I think there was £6.75. I always remember because I went to the ballet shop in Harborne where we were living in Birmingham, and I bought the tap shoes in secret, and I always kept them under my bed in the hope that one day I will be able to go to tap lessons.
Did you ever put them
on? Yeah, and I used to tap on the kitchen floor when my parents were out. And
sorry, but they should have sent you to Pakistan. You're such a bad kid.
I just wanted to dance like all my friends. But then
this
after
is Billy Elliot, but a Birmingham.
I know, Muslim girl,
Billy Elliot, Muslim Brummy Billy Elliot. But Walmart just want to be a top dancer.
And then what happened was they wouldn't let me dance, and all my friends were dancing. And every day after school, they would send us to mosque lessons, where we would have to go and see this imam who had a massive beard and a stick. And if we got anything wrong, he would beat us with the stick. And honestly, the stick was not like a proper stick. He broke it off a bamboo tree outside. So it was like a massive log. Yeah. And it was rough around the edges.
No.
And, you know, the boys would get beaten on their bums. The girls would get beaten on their hands. I used to get beaten all the time with this man with the beard with the stick. And they would make us learn the Quran and all religious things after school every day. And all I would do is sit there and think, I want to be tap dancing.
Oh.
I don't feel sorry for her. She can find a way. She stole them and she did it at home on the kitchen tiles.
Tap dance.
I know.
All you wanted to do was tap dance and eat bits again.
Yes, that's right. And just be the centre of attention.
Yeah.
And I never got any of that.
Yes, you did. You played Mary Magdalene. That's an impact role.
It was an impact because I turned it into a stand-up comedy show. Everybody was laughing. I loved the laughter.
This is what I want to get into. How do you turn that role? Mary Magdalene, she mainly appears in the Bible, right, when Jesus has died already.
Yeah. And what she does is she finds the empty tomb.
Yes.
And what happened is I was with two other women and we go and we find the empty tomb. And what happened is when I saw the empty tomb, I went, oh my God! It's empty! Why is it empty? And I made such a scene about this empty why is it empty?
Panto Dame sort of a thing. You really
I turned it into the Muslim Kenneth Williams. It was like, look at this, it's empty.
Oh,
and
day.
People started laughing. I'm 11. I mean, really. People started laughing.
Hey, that first laugh, it means a lot. It really does.
It was the gateway to so many other things. I felt free. I felt I had a voice. I felt I had power.
Yeah.
The power that having you say something and everybody laughs at what you've said.
Yeah.
There is a power in that that I never had at home. I wasn't allowed opinions. I wasn't allowed to talk. I wasn't allowed to be a vocal woman. Women don't do that in our culture.
But your brothers were allowed
yes,
to.
Yes, always. They were always brought up to be the men, to say what they wanted, to tell me what to do. And I never had that power ever in my life.
So then after Mary Magdalene, and yeah, knew you had that power to make people laugh. Were you then making people laugh at school?
Yeah, oh God, yes. I mean, after that, when I went into secondary school, I was in Huckleberry Finn. I played Finn.
Wait, what is Huckleberry Finn? I've heard of it, but is it like...
It's a school play. It's a really good play. Uh-huh. And I played Finn. I played a boy. When I was a girl, dressed up as a boy. And also I took part in all school assemblies. I was in one play called Give My Regards to Broadway, where I did the Charleston.
Are you serious?
And I just loved
it. Finally danced.
And I loved it, being in the school plays, dancing, singing. I was a terrible singer, always out of tune, but I just loved being vocal.
Preach.
And my parents, they never ever came to watch me.
That's what I was curious about. Like, were they aware you were staying behind school to do rehearsals, but they wouldn't come and actively support it?
They never came to watch me in any school plays. And you know, in all the years I've been doing stand-up, they never watch me do stand-up live.
Really?
Do they watch it on the telly?
Do you know something strange? People always ask me this about the telly thing, because I remember a couple of years ago, I was on tour, mm-hmm. and I was in Manchester that night doing a gig at the Lowry. Mm-hmm. And that night, I was on Jonathan Ross, which had been pre-recorded.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were driving down the motorway. Somebody else was driving. And I was driving down the motorway. And it was on TV. Mm-hmm. And all my friends and people were tweeting me, going, yeah, this was yeah. brilliant. Mm. Oh, we loved it. And then that night I was going to stay in Birmingham with my parents. And I walked in and to the living room and they had just finished watching it. And they didn't mention it. And it was never talked about. And it was never talked about ever again. They never asked me any questions about it. It just... Never,
but you know they watched it, like, yeah. for sure.
My brother was there and they said, oh, we watched yeah. it together. But it was never, ever talked about and it's never been mentioned since.
Do you think they do show part yet and they do watch it?
Oh, yeah, I do.
But
think...
they never want to acknowledge it.
Yes, exactly. I think so. I think they do watch me on TV. Yeah, they've yeah. never watched me live.
But I get that. Like, my parents don't come. Like, my mum really wants to, but, like, I'd rather
My parents
not.
Don't want to.
Okay. Mm. I'm trying to get them an out.
Yeah, because but I do agree, Helen, that some, you know, sometimes it's generational. Mm. Sometimes it's cultural. Mm. Sometimes people are just different to you. Sometimes your yeah. parents are just different to you. Yeah. Doesn't mean that you can't love them.
No.
Or that you can't like them. They're just different to you. And... you know, because we are people that become comedians. There is something wrong with you. To
Thank
do
you very much.
Do.
I yeah. seriously appreciate
it's
that.
Not,
that means a lot.
And it's not a normal thing to do.
All right. Well, look at her
stand,
as well when you say that.
To stand in front of a room full of people that you don't know, yeah. tell them yeah. personal things about yourself, and want acknowledgement for yeah. that. There is something wrong with
told
that.
Told everyone in Essex last night that my lips are long. I don't know why. I panicked.
Yeah, I told everybody the other night in Birmingham that I tried to lose my virginity to a carrot. I mean,
my paddle brush.
Why? Did I do that? That's not normal. Not normal behaviour, right?
But I think you're a classic attention seeker. Your parents weren't giving it to you at home, so you had to go and outsource it. So you were constantly trying to find it from other people. And even now, like, you're still aware of if your parents watch something yeah. or don't watch. Like, yeah. you are looking for that applause and gratification from other people because you weren't going to get it at home.
But do you think after doing comedy for so many years and getting that attention every night and, you know, doing getting recognition off TV and... Don't you think that would be enough for us?
No.
I didn't play Mary in the school play, so I'm never gonna be okay. Like, I got fucked over as a child. I never got a lead in a school play, so I'm never gonna recover.
It never goes away.
Yeah.
Do you think
laugh with a drug. You enjoy it, but then it leaves and you're searching for that next
I agree, Rosie.
Applause.
I agree, but and also the other thing is, you know, the other day I was recording Sarah Millican's new show on Radio 4.
Yeah,
Elephant in the Room, and we did it remotely.
Yeah,
so she was in her house, I was in my house, everybody, all the other guests were in their house, yeah. and they had an audience remotely.
Yeah,
so it was they were also in their houses, but it was linked up.
Yeah,
and. For the first time in 9 months, we heard the sound of laughter.
Yeah.
Collective laughter. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it just knocked us.
Yeah.
Like, she said to me afterwards, God, the sound of laughter.
Yeah.
We haven't, we comedians, we're used to hearing it 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Hopefully.
To
yeah.
not have,
yeah.
yeah, sometimes from ourselves. And, but you know what? To not hear that for 9 months. And then all of a sudden you hear it.
Yeah.
And we suddenly realize the power of the sound of laughter. It's yeah. healing.
Yeah.
it's healing. It lifts us.
Yeah.
It makes us realise what...
But we don't realise that day to day. It's the same as when you're a kid. Like, I can't pinpoint when I suddenly realised that, like, making people laugh was my favourite thing to do. But I remember always, like, thinking, oh, on the walk to school, I want to do that bit. Or, like, say that to my friends and make them laugh till we get to school.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, I don't remember the clicking. But it just happens. Like, and I was the same as you. Same as Rosie, actually. Yeah. Like, school plays, we'd 100%. We'd audition. We'd try and get in them. Assemblies, if there was a chance to perform, we would be up there performing. Like, it's just from that early age, it was there.
And my fundamentally is just realizing that you have a power to make someone happier, and that makes them happy, and that makes you happy.
Absolutely. Nobody's in this business to make people miserable.
No. I could list a couple.
Listen, oh my God, I've made people miserable. But I have offended people.
We've all done it.
I've made people cry. Come on. I've made people go home depressed. But I never intended that. I always went out with the intention of making people happy, making people laugh. We are in the business of making people laugh.
Yeah.
And that is our intention. That
God,
is what
your parents must be so proud of you.
Hello, they've never watched me live.
I think it must be interesting as well, coming from such a big family where the brothers allowed to do whatever they wanted. Yeah. Like, were they funny? Did you have funny siblings?
No. That's what I was going to say, Helen, is that when you said about you always wanted to go and audition for stuff and you wanted to make your friends laugh before they got to school. In my house, there was never any laughter. And this is what is very strange. It's a very extreme situation. Is that in our house, there was never any laughter. My dad was very serious and humorless. Mm-hmm. And you know, I suppose they were funny in their odd way, but we never laughed together as a family.
I think that's common for comics. Yeah. I think it is like a miserable home and trying to constantly make it happier. Yeah, I think it is. It's that innate need to like lift a situation and like make it laugh. I think a lot of comics are born from like difficult, maybe like sadder homes, who are constantly trying to make it really, really fun, so they find their escape elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's uncommon. It's not great, but
I there was never any laughter in our house. Like, I never heard laughter. But we watched a lot of comedy. Like, as a family, like my mum used to love Are You Being Served? Some Mothers Do Have Them, Kenny Everett, all the gay ones.
Yeah.
She didn't
your mum is a fascinating woman. She didn't know, there's a layer to this.
She didn't know they were gay men. She Frankie Howard, Kenny Everett. She was John Inman. She'd go, I really like these men. Aren't they funny? They laugh really funny.
But no awareness of
awareness that they were gay. But they were all gay. She loved all the men. And she never realised they were gay. And neither did I till years later. Yeah. But she...
Does she know now?
I think she knows now.
Oh, hi. Sorry to interrupt Rosie and I with more me. Catherine, shut the fuck up. Shut up. But I am here with previous guest Catherine Bohart to talk about an amazing online festival that is coming your way. I am not being sarcastic. Catherine, take it away.
Oh, look, I co-host this show every week with Helen and we're doing a weekend festival. I asked her when I was feeling blue and we're stuck with it. But look, the point is, the people doing work in progress is on this weekend called Gigfest are unbelievable. We have Stuart Goldsmith, Olga Koch.
Yes.
I'm doing one, you're doing
one.
Chloe Petz, Nabil Abdul Rashid, Maisie Adam, Rosie Jones.
Rosie Jones from Daddy.
Crazy. Sindhu V and Charlie Jordan, Andrew White. So it is a really good lineup. And yes, Helen will be there, which I know will make it insufferable. But I almost said unsufferable, but that's because we are drunk as we record this. The point is, if you like Daddy, what's your podcast called?
Oh my God, go fuck yourself. Guys, go on my website. It's helenbauer.co.uk or .com. I'll figure it out later. It's in my... Shut your mouth. And on Rosie's website as well. And there's tickets to GigFest. Please come and watch us do an hour online. As I've mentioned before, there will be a special prize for anyone who watches an hour of Rosie and then an hour of me on the Sunday of March. Shut up.
of March 21st?
It's the weekend of the 20th, 21st, and we have 5 hours of comedy both days. So it fills the time better than Netflix, and Helen won't be there the whole time.
God bless you and enjoy the rest of the episode. Amen.
When is God bless you your thing?
Fuck you. Oh.
So when you were doing like your later years exams, like 15, 16, and you're starting, the conversations are starting at school about what do you want to do when you grow up? Like, what do you want to do after this? Was performance in your mind at all?
I was always in all the school plays, always got an A for drama.
We didn't ask for your grades. Fucking hell. What is it with people who got A's who still need to tell you they got A's?
Six A's and four B's. Thank you so much.
Go on, Rosie, tell us your grades.
I got 3 A's at A level.
Wow! That's amazing. I didn't get that.
I got an E in economics.
Me too.
But my parents were proud of me and that's what counts. Yeah, I got worse grades than both of you and my mum clapped me out of the room. Like, that's my baby girl, she's trying her best.
You didn't get deported and forced into marriage.
Hell no, got to move to Berlin and go fuck sex parties.
On one of my parents' evenings, my drama teacher, Mrs. Fisher-Jones, who was amazing.
What a name.
She was so bohemian. Big earrings.
Pashmina.
Big chunky necklaces, long cardigans.
Yes.
And she was a fabulous teacher, Mrs. Fisher-Jones. And on Parents' Evening, she said to my mum and dad, your daughter has a real talent for drama. You should send her to drama school, a stage school after school.
The dream for many performance kids.
And my parents said, thank you very much, but we won't be doing that. And they sent me for extra science lessons after school instead. Extra chemistry lessons, extra maths lessons. We had a tutor come to the house to teach me chemistry and maths. But really, I wanted to be at the stage school, tap dancing and doing drama.
Oh. Ouch. But were you allowed to pick drama for GCSE? Was that something you were able to get through?
I was able to do that.
Good.
But my whole childhood... I've never said this before, but I read this article in a Sunday magazine about this theatre school called the Sylvia Young Theatre School.
I've heard of that,
And I read that all the cast of Grange Hill came from there.
Yeah.
And a lot of the shows I was watching after school, the kids came from this Sylvia Young Theatre School.
Yeah.
And I was about 11 or 12 and I wrote to the head teacher of Sylvia Young Theatre School asking if I could come and be a student there. And she wrote back to me and she said, a lot of our students are day students who live in London or they are boarding here. You have to ask your parents if they would. And also it's private. You have to pay for it.
Oh.
You have to ask your parents if you could come. And I used to keep that letter under my pillow with pictures of the Sylvia Young Theatre School, thinking that one day I'm going to be there. And once I'm there, I'll be able to be in Grange Hill and EastEnders and all these programmes where they hire the kids from this school to be in there. I was always dreaming of this stage. I was always dreaming about it.
Yeah.
But it seemed like such a long way away from where I was in my life.
Yeah,
I thought I just was always dreaming about it and thinking, am I going to get there? Will I get there?
Yeah.
Will I have this?
You got there.
And then...
She's not in Grange Hill.
Then, you know, when I became a comedian, I started doing that in secret. I did it in secret for about 7 years and nobody knew.
Really?
6, 7 years. I never told anybody.
And when did you start doing stand-up? Like, how old are you?
I started in about 13 years ago, 14 years ago. And in the beginning, nobody knew, and I used to do it in secret. And I did it sporadically because I was still teaching at the time. Mm-hmm. But then when I started doing it seriously, I started doing it every night. And I really wanted to get good.
Yeah.
I started 2 or 3 gigs a night, really gigging properly. I wanted to get good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think people that do stand-up love it. That people that really do stand-up, like Edinburgh shows, gig every night, write new material. People that do that really love stand-up.
Yeah.
And we don't do it for the money. And we don't do it for the fame. And when I think about what I've been through, dying on my ass, people throwing things at me, death threats, hate mail.
Yeah.
When I look back at it, I think, God, I must really love it. You know, who gets a death threat and then thinks, you know what? That's fine. I'll get up and do it again tomorrow night and say exactly the same things. I must have really loved it.
Definitely. At the beginning, when I think about how far I will travel for no money.
I know.
To probably die on my ass. Yeah. To get back to my house at 2 a.m., to wake up at 7 and do a full day's work.
And the excitement of it, gigging in Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot believe I'm going to go perform somewhere I've never been before.
Like, it's so exciting.
I remember going to a working men's club in Leeds. on a Wednesday night, and I was teaching all day from 9 till 4.
Yeah.
Then I'd get in the car, I'd drive to Leeds, this working men's club where they all booed me off stage. And
great,
I think I got about 40 quid for it.
Yeah.
I paid for the petrol and I drove back, and I remember getting back at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And you know that feeling you've died horribly?
Yeah. Mm.
Nobody will understand this apart from maybe another comedian.
Yeah.
It's like having a hangover. You wake up in the next morning like something awful happened the night before.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
Yeah.
And then I got up 3 hours later to go and teach these 16-year-old boys in Tower Hamlets in the East End science, and who were not interested in science. Neither was I. And
not with all the tutoring you have.
Oh, my God. I'm in a job that I hate. I'm dying on my ass every night. I'm being tortured to death. Why am I doing this? I must have loved it. I must have thought, listen, I'm going to do this and I'm going to get better and it's going to go somewhere.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I want to know, because we've heard a lot about your parents. What about your siblings? Were they ever supportive?
I've got 3 brothers and 1 sister, and my sister's 7 years younger than me.
Wow.
So she wasn't born when I was growing up with my brothers. So it was just me and my 3 brothers. And because my parents had given them so much power and so much freedom, you can do what you want. Boys do this, girls do this. You know, my dad used to say, as a girl, you need to learn to cook and clean, because one day you're going to get married and you need to know how to cook and clean. My brothers were out playing cricket, playing football. They were given allowed to go to parties. I was never allowed to go to my first
party. Like birthday parties.
I was never allowed. They were allowed to go to school trips. I was never allowed to go on school trips.
Oh, man.
Because their biggest fear was that I was going to get pregnant. And now, and now they're pissed off that I'm not pregnant. I mean, you can't have it both ways. And then what happened is they would always be worried that I'd look at a boy would see me, I'd get pregnant and bring shame on the family, you know. And so I was never allowed out. Ever. My brothers could go to parties, they could go and hang out with their friends, go to their friends' houses. And because my brothers were brought up with that, they're kind of brought up with viewing women in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they always kind of saw me beneath them because I was a girl and they were a boy.
Oh, no.
I have an older brother, and he was very much like that. My other 2 brothers are lovely though, and they saw me as a really strong woman who went out and did what she wanted to do. And they were very supportive to me and they're lovely. But it was difficult being the only girl with 3 brothers. It's really hard because you're trying to get your voice heard.
Yeah.
You're trying to stand your ground. You're trying to have some rights. You're trying to just change things and do what your friends are doing. My friends Elizabeth and Christine and Penny, I wanted to be like them.
Yeah.
You know, why couldn't I wear a mini skirt? Why couldn't I go on holiday? Why
they wouldn't have been as good as Mary Magdalene. Like,
but
you don't
I had great legs and I wanted to show them off.
We can show them off now.
I know. But you know what? I never look back and think that was sad. Because when you're a child, you don't know any different.
Yeah. But if you're like having to stay home, not going out to the parties.
I hated
so
that.
So you want to make people laugh. Like, were you ever craving attention in like a sexual love way as a child? Like when you turned like 14, 15, people started pairing off with boyfriends. Like, were you like...
I was really curious about boys and I really like boys.
Did you like making them laugh?
I did. I liked being centre of attention. Yeah. But they never liked me. And I never had any like boyfriends or I never had any interaction. The first time I met or had an interaction with a boy that I wasn't related to, I think I was 18.
Really?
Yeah, I'd only ever had interactions with my brothers. And the first time I met a boy and knew a boy was when I went to work at McDonald's when I was 18.
Great job.
Great job.
In Birmingham?
Yeah.
Which one?
In Harborne.
Did you get free meals?
All the time. Lovely. And I just loved it. And I just loved it. I put on about 20 stones.
Worth it, though. Yeah, my brother just finished working at McDonald's. He was there for like a year and he didn't gain any weight. And I was absolutely livid.
I just loved it.
I don't know how he did it. It was absolute madness.
The thing I loved most is that there were men there.
Yeah, obviously.
And I just fancied
you're finally
them.
Out.
All of them.
Did you love getting their attention? Was that something you were aware of?
I just wanted to kiss them all.
And did you?
No. I was too scared. I think I'd be repressed.
Yeah, you haven't so mastered, but you're still repressed.
Like, I think so.
100%. 100%.
Helen,
that's a
this
lot
liberal
of
white woman telling
do.
Me. You are repressed.
It's not a good look on me. I'm fully
you
aware of that. This
repressed.
Isn't a good look for me, being the white woman without a disability in the room, telling people what they are.
The most,
but I stick up for it.
Helen, you are the most liberal white woman.
I'm on the extreme end of things, 100%.
I bet you were going to nudist camps when you were 13 with your
My
mother.
My grandfather was a nudist.
Really?
Yeah, but like all Germans are nudists.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Yes, a naked place.
I thought that was just a stereotype.
No. No, good Lord, no.
Do they just let everybody walk around naked?
No, well, they don't walk around naked. But the lakes people are naked. In the parks, you can sunbathe naked.
Do they go to the supermarket naked?
Ah, na klar, immer so.
Really?
Nein. No, of course not.
And as a culture... That kind of liberalism and nudity.
Too
how,
much.
How is it? Is it too much?
No, it's not. It's fine.
What's the positive aspect of that?
I think you're less... Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Obviously, I grew up in a very conservative town as well. So
where?
I'm from Fleet, so in northeast Hampshire.
Oh, is that very conservative? Mm-hmm.
I went there last night.
Thank you very much. It's on like the UK Bible Belt. Like that's the sort of way you could describe
it. Really?
Like it's crazy conservative. Like it's always been conservative. So it's like I was raised in that way, but then also going to a school where like, I don't know. I think I had a nice time being raised liberal. But yeah, I never thought about the negative and upsides of it. But I think in general, it's an up.
Yeah.
But also it does mean that everything's an option. So then it's very hard to make choices.
Does it make you feel good about your body? And
no, God, no. But I'm still a woman. Like that's something that doesn't matter what happens.
Yeah.
Like, you've still got to go to school. You've still got to go through like stuff.
You've still got a mum.
Yeah, about to say, I've got a mum. Like you can be as like liberal as you want, but you can't help but like pass on like food problems, can you?
Really?
100%. I'm also aware my mum listens to this. So hi, Anne. Thank you for the eating disorders.
Oh, really? You inherit that from your mum?
I think everyone does. Yeah. I think it doesn't matter. I was in the generation of Special K diets where like you did a bowl of cereal for breakfast, a bowl of cereal for lunch, and all the girls would talk about it on the way to school. Like it was, that's one of those things which I don't think is, that's just a culturally world influence
on you. Yeah,
it's
a cultural thing. Like when I was growing up, I was very skinny. And my mum always used to say to me, nobody's going to want to marry you. You're too skinny. You need to put weight on. You need to get fat. You need to get fat. Men don't like skinny women.
Yeah.
And also in our culture, I was always told to cover up. Mm-hmm. So in the house, I always had to wear a jumper over my dress or a shawl over my breast so that I wouldn't expose any part of my body.
Yeah.
So I grew up being quite ashamed of, of being skinny and of being exposing anything.
Oh, whatever your body type, your family will find a way to make you ashamed of it. It's insane.
And then as I grew up, I thought, I like my body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was then too scared to show it off.
Yeah.
It's fucking tricky. Particularly like when you're younger sort of a thing. Because you're very aware of like, I was a good swimmer. Like I loved swimming. I did swimming lessons from very young.
Me too.
But I was good at it. And I wasn't very sporty particularly. So whenever we went swimming, I loved it until you get to that age where all of a sudden you're very aware of your body. And I wanted to go swimming, but I remember being like, can I get there early and already be in the pool? Like it really fucks you
up.
Same
thing happened to me. I was a brilliant swimmer.
Yeah, and so you want to show it off.
And I used to go swimming every Saturday. I had all my swimming badges. Mm-hmm. And of all the, in my family, I was better than all my brothers.
Of course but when you fucking I, were. Here we go.
When I got to 13, the swimming lessons had to stop.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't allowed to show my legs anymore.
Oh!
And because I'd reached puberty. And so I remember I had this red swimming costume with a blue and white
stripe. Your vagina's not on your knee.
It is now. And when I got to 13, I reached puberty and my mum said, you can't go swimming anymore because you're growing hair on your legs, you're growing hair everywhere and boys will see you and they'll be attracted to you. And so we've got to stop.
Oh, man.
So I stopped swimming. When I grew up, you know, as an adult, I go swimming every day now.
Good.
But for years it stopped and it was the thing that I loved because it made me feel free being in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But then if you can't do it, oh man, no wonder you ended up being a comedian. Yeah. Holy fucking shit. Your parents raised you to be a comic.
But what's weird?
They fucked it. Your parents absolutely fucked it.
What's weird is there was no Muslim women before me that ever did stand up in this country.
No.
No.
And it was such an out there thing to do when I look back on it.
Yeah.
That was
what year was it?
It was in 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
When I first did like a gig and then went back, stopped and then went back to it. But I never, there was no, Chappie was around, but there was no other Asian women.
No. Yeah.
And it was kind of an out there thing to do but when people found out in the family, they'd all talk about me as though I was like a pariah, as though, you know, I'd done something really shameful and bad. And this was the reason I'm not married. There's many reasons I'm not married.
Stand-up like comedy is not one of them. It is an out there thing to do, but playing Mary Magdalene as a comedy role is also an out there thing to do. I don't
there,
feel like it's out of character for
the
you.
The clues were there, weren't they? But as white women, I mean, do your parents think, are they proud that you are a stand-up? Would they tell people that you're stand-up?
Yeah. My mum and dad are really proud, and I am aware that I am so lucky. But as well as that, then bringing up a disabled child, I was never told that I couldn't do anything. So I'm a comedian because they were so open to it all. But you know what? My mum is so supportive right now.
She's but so on it, Andrea.
So good. Hello, Andrea. But when I told her I was going to do stand-up, she said, I can never come and watch you live. But that wasn't an embarrassment thing. That was, she's quite an introvert.
Oh, right.
And the idea of me being on stage and being bad at it made her feel so nervous. Yeah. So she waited till I got good. Mm. And now she'll come to every show.
She does?
Yeah.
How does it make you feel when you know that your mum is in the audience?
I think I get more nervous, especially because my material is quite rude, but she's used to it now. And yeah, I can see her beaming, and yeah,
But that made you believe that you could do it.
Yeah. And
that's everything, isn't
I
it?
I feel very lucky.
Do you think that's why you think you were able to do it? Because they believed that you could?
Yeah. I think you're amazing because I don't know if I will be able to do it.
If you didn't have their support? Really?
I just think it's mad you told them you were starting stand-up. Like, I'm with you. I didn't tell anyone. Just started. Like, I just think that's just crazy.
Why did you tell them?
I think I wanted their support on some level. Yeah. And I never really kept secrets from them.
Really?
So never. Apart from my sexuality. But that wasn't a secret. I just never told them I was gay because I never had a need to, like, and never had a girlfriend. So I only told them I was gay right before I started talking about being gay on stage because I wanted them to know before I told Derek in Portsmouth.
There's so many Derek's in Portsmouth. Good shout.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm aware I have a good relationship with them, and I told them because I knew it would be such a big part of my life. I wanted them to be part of it.
I just want to say that I'm loving this podcast has now become two white women show off about how supportive their families are. That's literally the new theme.
I think it's really amazing how you talk about that so vividly. And I try to imagine what that must be like. That she's got these two supportive parents that made her feel she could do anything in life. And therefore she did. She never felt that her disability was a hurdle. She could do anything. She became a stand-up comedian. She became a great, successful one. For the one simple fact, her parents believed in her. Her parents told her she could do it, therefore she could. That's such a simple concept that she was able to do that all because of her parents. And she's never had secrets from her parents.
That's mad, isn't it?
My whole life has been a secret. My parents don't know anything about me.
But then I feel like that has made you the amazing comedian because it can work both ways. Because that lack of support made you hungry for it and more determined.
Also, we find our own people to support us. Like you mentioned that drama teacher who was great. Like sometimes it doesn't have to come from a parent, but in the adolescent years, like obviously ideally it's at home, but it can sometimes come from a source like a drama teacher. Yeah. Doing something as simple as saying something to your parents, like she should, and that's just enough to be like, oh, she thinks like someone thinks I could.
And they
really make an impact.
But I think that you need that all the way through your life.
Yeah.
You need that in comedy.
Yeah.
You need one person in comedy, your agent or the booker.
But that's why getting an agent is such a big feeling because it's like, oh, someone else thinks I can do this. Because until then you think it's just you.
Yeah, or they think I can make some money out of her.
Or that.
But either way, it's someone backing you.
You need that. Especially in this business. You need that.
Shazia, you're about to get that for the first time in your life.
Am I?
You're about to have an ultimate backer.
I feel like this is your life. I feel like you're Michael Aspel.
Thank you very much.
And you're going to get out the big red book.
Wow. Thank you very much.
This is your life. This was your life.
It's over. Yeah. Welcome to the end days.
Hello, I am your daddy.
No, don't say no. Okay.
Your daddy's gonna take you on a day trip. But I feel like season 4, I might do something very different with you, Shazia.
Holy shit.
We're not going on a day trip. We're going on a week away.
I love a week away.
And me, you and Helen.
Oh, yeah?
We're going to do all the things in your childhood that you weren't allowed to do.
Oh, God.
So one day we're going to go on a school trip.
Great.
One day we're going to all go swimming in our favourite costumes.
Naked.
Naked. And then we'll all go to McDonald's.
Oh, my God.
And then can we go tap dancing?
No, that's a whole day in itself.
I don't want to do a full day of tap.
We doing a full day tap.
You know what? My mum does tap dancing once a week. We can go do it with her
we'll
and the ladies in Fleet.
There.
Yeah.
One day we are putting on the Mary Magdalene play.
Good, because I actually want to see this.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see 11-year-olds doing the resurrection of Christ.
But
like,
also,
it's such a choice of a drama department, isn't it?
But
in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
I just want to make it very clear. Every school across the country does the birth of Jesus Christ. But you went to a school that was like, death and resurrection. There's something wrong with that, but we don't have time.
That's hilarious.
But then that day, before we put on the play, we're going to go to communion and you're having all the wine.
Oh, that's going to be great.
No,
I've never drunk wine.
Do you still not drink?
I've never drunk wine in my life.
What do you drink?
I've drunk champagne a couple of times, a few times. I mean, many times. But I've never drunk wine. I've never drunk red wine. I've never drunk white wine. I've never drunk beer.
Mulled wine?
No. Never drunk...
Ribena?
Cider?
Yeah, Ribena. I've never drunk beer.
Well...
I was always scared to do that.
Hey, that's fine. You do whatever you want.
And then one day...
I'm going to get pissed on wine and forced to masturbate, though.
And then one day we are going to teach her how to masturbate.
That'll be a masterclass from me. You're going to love it.
Happy week.
A masterclass.
Yeah.
On master.
Happy week away.
Yay! Thank you, Daddy.
Thank you for that.
How do you think your week's going to be? Looking forward to it?
It's a carry on Rosie.
What is your favourite day?
My favourite day, I think I like Friday.
I think she was looking for like tap day
because
on McDonald's
when,
day.
When I
like...
was a kid, I had a packet of knickers and they had the days of the week on. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And Friday knickers were the ones I had for the longest amount of time.
That was the best Miss Congeniality moment of all time. That was fucking perfect. Shazia, you've been the best.
Friday, we're going tap dancing.
I would love that.
All with special knickers on.
I would love that.
That has been amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shazia.
No, thank you for having me.
No. Thank you.
No, thank you.
No. Oh,
can I just tell one Rosie anecdote? The last time I saw Rosie, she was in Edinburgh and she was doing a show at this venue and she had no audience. She had absolutely nobody was there.
What?
And it was like 10 minutes before the show was about to begin. And I'm walking down Cowgate and she runs out of the venue and she goes, I've got no audience.
It's 2017.
And, yeah. And I've got, and my show starts in 10 minutes and I've got no audience. And she was on the street shouting like a mad woman. I've got no audience. And there was like a group of comedians, I was one of them, walking up the street. We saw Rosie just standing outside the venue shouting.
Fucking hell.
And so me and some other comics, we got onto the street and started grabbing people from the street and dragging them into the venue so that Rosie could have an audience.
Holy shit,
and
Rosie.
Me and Mark Olver managed to get about 25 people from the street into the venue. And then when about 10 minutes later, the venue was packed and we couldn't get in.
Sold out.
It was sold out. And me and Mark Olver, who'd got the audience in, they wouldn't let us in. And it was packed and Rosie was doing this sellout performance.
Rosie, I don't know why you're laughing. Like, that's a good story for you. You come across badly in that. You come across desperate on the street.
That Edinburgh, I did three Fringe, and I went back and I had a suitcase of £3,000 in cash.
Those are the good old days.
Right, give us your
cash. Do you remember cash?
Give us your socials, please, just to, and then we can do more Rosie Star. Unbelievable.
That is such a fucking hilarious story. A suitcase of cash, you bank robber. I mean, do you remember cash?
I got paid in cash last night. I feel good right now. I got cash last night.
How?
I got paid in a Christmas card. That's very nice. Shazia, please give us your socials before we forget.
Socials?
Yes. Or anything you want to plug.
My social security number.
Please. Sort code, account number.
30-19-16
Santander. I'm with Santander. How fun is that?
Don't hack me. Don't
That's
hack
actually
me.
Not the sort code for Santander. It's 0920127.
I'm on Instagram. I am the Shazia Mercer. On Twitter, I don't tweet that much. I'm on Instagram more. I like pictures. But on Twitter, I am Shazia Mercer 1.
Sick.
And I'm on Facebook, Shazia Mercer.
Come on, guys. Yeah. I mean, and we're also going to be tagging her on
and
all of our socials
life,
about this episode.
I am Dame Shazia Mercer.
Are you a dame?
No.
Oh my God. I literally lost it for a second.
One day. We're doing that on our week out.
A damehood?
Yeah.
You've been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
You have one new voice message. New voice messages.
Bonjour, Monsieur James Acaster. It's our season finale next week. This is such an emotional moment for me and Rosie Jones, and we just know we need to go out with a bang, and we just think you would be the perfect guest to be Daddy's last baby boy of series 4. So please, please call us back, let us know if you're free, and let's do this thing. Merci beaucoup.
Deleted.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.